Hi there, I'm Corey.
And I'm Lane. If y'all are looking for a little American magic,
then put away your athames and wands and dig out your box of roots, stones, and bones.
This is New World Witchery.
Hello, and happy belated Mother's Day, everyone. A few years ago for Mother's Day, we released an episode which was all about the figure known as the Dark Mother. That show looked at the figure of the Underworld Mother, sometimes thought of as the Queen of Elfheim, Queen Under the Hill, or Queen Under the Mound, sometimes even the Queen of Hell, spelled with one or two L's, depending on who you are and where you're coming from. We shared some stories, some songs, some poems about her, and hopefully she caught your attention, or at least for a few of you. However, the Dark Mother for many is only half of the picture. While some do pair her with a Lord of Light type figure, you can think here of somebody like Apollo, we also have the concept of a brighter maternal figure in a number of tales, including several from the New World. So that brings us to our current show. We wanted to share stories of this bright mother, often thought of as the Queen of Heaven, the Star Maiden, or as the moon in her changing faces and phases. Now, that's not to say that all of the stories that you're going to hear are going to be about the same figure exactly, or that these goddesses, spirits, queens that we hear about won't have a bit of darkness in them either. If we're living in an enchanted world, we live in a world of paradoxes, wonders, and strangeness. So, these mother figures each have their own quirks that make them unique, even while they all share certain key features, such as a desire to help humanity, or the way they frequently select a single individual to represent them to everyone else. More than anything, we hope that these stories will offer a glimpse of the other side of divine femininity. We'll have three tales, some additional lore, including practices for revering some of these queens, and a bit of music along the way. We'll begin with one of the best-known Native American tales, The White Buffalo Woman. Stay tuned.
Ate machpia unshulapo. Inomakha, eteon hib, naikteon galapikte. Unshulapo. Weohiopata tatrankoyate, kola unshulapo. Wazieta hechakoyate, unshulapo. Weohiopata sintesaployate. Kola unshulapo. Itokarata hihaoyate. Unshulapo. Natrukashila okantraka na unh umpi na unshulapo na unkeapo. Mitakuye oyasi.
The White Buffalo Woman, a story of the Sioux Nation. One summer, so long ago, nobody remembers when it was, seven sacred council fires of the Lakota Nation came together and camped. The sun shone brightly every day, but the people were starving. They had no game to hunt. Every day, scouts would travel out over the land to search for food, but all came back empty-handed. One day, Chief Standing Hollow Horn sent two young men out as scouts. They traveled on foot, for horses had not yet come to the Sioux Nation. They traveled long and far, but found nothing, until at last they came to a high hill. They decided to climb it to see the whole country, and halfway up they saw something coming towards them from very far away. But the figure seemed to be floating instead of walking. From this, they realized that the person they saw must be Wakan, a holy person. As it came near, they realized it was a beautiful young woman, more beautiful than they'd ever seen, with two round red dots of face paint on her cheeks. She wore white buckskin, tanned until it shone in the sun. It was embroidered with sacred and marvelous designs of porcupine quill, in radiant colors no ordinary woman could have made. The stranger presented herself as the White Buffalo Woman. In her hands she carried a large bundle and a fan of sage leaves. She wore her blue-black hair loose except for a strand dangling to the left, which was tied up with buffalo fur. Her eyes sparkled, showing great power within. The men trembled to look upon her. One became bold and reached out his hand to touch her, but the woman, being very sacred, could not be treated so disrespectfully, and lightning lashed out from the sky and struck the brash young man, burning him into cinders and blackened bone. The other scout behaved correctly, and to him White Buffalo Woman said, "Good things I bring, something holy to your nation, to your people. A message I carry for your people from the buffalo. Go back to the camp and tell the people to prepare for my arrival. Tell your chief to put up a medicine lodge with 24 poles and let it be made holy for my coming." The young hunter returned to his camp. He told his chief, Chief Standing Hollow Horn, what he had seen and what the sacred woman had commanded. The chief told the crier, and the crier went through the camp circle, calling out, "A Wakan woman is coming. A holy woman approaches. Make things ready." The people put up a big medicine tent and waited. After 4 days, White Buffalo Woman appeared, carrying her bundle in front of her. Her buckskin dress shone white in the sun, even from far off. Chief Standing Hollow Horn invited her to the medicine lodge, and she went in and circled the interior in the direction of the sun. The chief addressed her respectfully, saying, "Sister, we are glad you have come. Please, please instruct us." She told him all she wished done. In the center, they were to put up a sacred altar made of red earth, with a buffalo skull and a 3-stick rack for the holy thing she was bringing. They did as she directed, and she traced a design with her finger on the smooth earth of the altar. She showed them all how to do this, and then circled the lodge again in the direction of the sun. She stopped before the chief and opened her bundle. The holy thing it contained was the sacred pipe, the Chanunpa. She held it out to the people to let them see it. She grasped the stem in her right hand, the bowl in her left, and thus ever since has the pipe been held. The chief spoke again, saying, "Sister, we are glad, but we have had no meat for some time, and all we can offer you is water." They dipped some sweet grass into a skin bag of water and gave it to her, and so to this day do the people dip sweet grass or an eagle wing in water and sprinkle it on the person to be purified. White Buffalo Woman showed the people how to use the pipe. She filled it with red willow bark tobacco and walked around the lodge 4 times in the way of the sun, following the direction of Anpetui. This represented the circle without end, the sacred hoop, and the road of life. The woman placed a dry buffalo chip on the fire and lit the pipe with it. This was to be the flame without end, passed on from generation to generation. She told them that the smoke rising from the bowl was the breath of the great grandfather mystery. White Buffalo Woman showed the people the right way to pray, the right words, the right gestures. She taught them how to sing the pipe-filling song, how to lift the pipe to the sky, toward grandfather, down towards Grandmother Earth, and then to the 4 directions. "With this holy pipe," she said, "you will walk like a living prayer. With your feet resting upon the earth, and the pipe stem reaching into the sky, your body forms a living bridge between the sacred beneath and the sacred above. Wakantanka smiles upon us, because now we are as one. Earth, sky, all living things, 2-legged, 4-legged, winged, the trees, the grasses, together with the people, they are all one, one family. The pipe holds them all together. "See this bowl," said the white buffalo woman. "Its stone represents the buffalo, but also flesh and blood of the man. The buffalo represents the universe and the four directions, for he stands on four legs. Thus, he also represents the four ages of creation. The buffalo was put on the earth by Wakantanka at the making of the world to hold back the waters. Every year he loses one hair, and in every one of the four ages he loses one leg. The sacred hoop will end when all the hair and legs of the great buffalo are gone, and the water comes back to cover the earth. The wooden stem of this pipe stands for all that grows upon the earth. The 12 feathers hanging from the stem, the backbone, joins the bowl, the skull. The spotted eagle, the very sacred bird who is the great spirit's messenger and the wisest of all the flying ones, is represented in the feathers. You are to join all things in the universe, for they all cry out to Tunkashila. Look at the bowl. Engraved on it are 7 circles of various sizes. They stand for the 7 sacred ceremonies you will practice with this pipe, the 7 sacred campfires of the Lakota Nation. The white buffalo woman then spoke to the women, telling them it was the work of their hands and the fruit of their bodies which kept the people alive. She told them they were of Mother Earth, and what they do was as sacred and as great as what the warriors did. The sacred pipe is something that binds men and women together in a circle of love, she said. It is one holy object, in the making of which both men and women have a hand. Men shall carve the bowl and make the stem. Women shall decorate with bands of colored porcupine quills. When a man takes a wife, they both hold the pipe at the same time, and a red cloth is wound around their hands, tying them for life. The white buffalo woman brought many other things for her Lakota sisters in her sacred bag. Corn, pemmican, and wild turnip. She taught them how to build a hearth fire. She filled the buffalo paunch with cold water and dropped a red hot stone in it. And she told them, this is how you shall cook corn and meat together. White buffalo woman also talked to the children, for children, she knew, had an understanding beyond their years. She told them what their fathers and mothers did was for them, that their parents could remember being little ones, and that they, the children, would grow up and have little ones of their own. She told them, you are the coming generation. That is why you are most important, most precious. Someday you will hold this pipe and smoke it. Someday you will pray with it. She spoke to all the people, saying that the pipe was alive. It was a red being, showing red life and a red road. At this first ceremony, they would learn to use the pipe. They would use it to keep the soul of a dead person, because through it they can talk to Wakantanka, the great mystery spirit. To this day, if a human dies, it is always a sacred day. It is the day when the soul is released to the great spirit. She told the Lakota they were the purest among the tribes, and for that reason, Tunkashila had bestowed upon them the holy Shanumpa. They had been chosen to take care of it for all of the people on the Turtle Continent. She spoke to them one last time, turning to Chief Standing Hollow Horn and saying, remember, this pipe is very sacred. Respect it, and it will take you to the end of the road. The 4 ages of creation are in me. I am the 4 ages. I will come to see you in every generation cycle. I shall come back to you. The woman took leave of them, saying she would return again, and the people saw her walking off in the same direction when she had come, outlined against the red ball of the setting sun. As she stopped, she rolled over 4 times. The first time she turned into a black buffalo, the second into a brown buffalo. On the 3rd roll she became a red buffalo, and finally, on the 4th time, she turned into a white female buffalo calf. And so, a white buffalo remains the most sacred living thing one can ever encounter. White Buffalo Woman disappeared over the horizon. Someday, she would return. But for now, she had left the people with many gifts. From a version told by Lane Deer at the Rosebud Indian Reservation in South Dakota, 1967. The story of White Buffalo Woman appeared in many Sioux tribes, but similar stories appeared among other tribes as well. A story from the Blackfoot of the Upper Northwest tells of a girl, the youngest of three wives of a Blackfoot warrior, who received a dream that a great buffalo spirit would soon be visiting their lands. He would come as a thunderous storm, and he should not be harmed while among them. If they would obey, he would bring buffalo behind him, and they would have food. At first, no one wanted to listen to the girl, but eventually, her husband's senior-most wife took her side and convinced the elders of the tribe to pay attention. Her husband realized there was something powerful in her dream, and as a storm began to blow up that night, everyone shut himself inside as the buffalo spirit passed through, heeding the girl's advice as she taught them the sacred song she learned in the dream and showed them how to make a special buffalo talisman. The next morning, there were buffalo herds all around them, and they did not want for food for a long, long time. The White Buffalo Woman brings gifts. In addition to food, she brings a way of life in the form of songs, rituals, and tools with which to communicate with the divine and even the dead. In many ways, she gives those she visits a sacred sense of purpose, a culture which sets them apart from others and makes them special. She is not to be trifled with, of course. One of the remarkable things about some of the queens of heaven is how quickly they can unleash destructive forces, how cool and impersonal such destruction can be. Think of the first scout who was burned to bones for attempting to touch White Buffalo Woman. When we meet a Bright Mother, it helps to remember that she is mighty and powerful, and usually not of the earth in the same way that a Dark Mother is. Dark Mothers can be destructive too. Their realms are the realms of the dead, after all. But they are often also touchable, even seductive in ways that Bright Mothers may not be. That's not to say that Bright Mothers don't have an earthier side sometimes. Our next story deals with a pair of divine women in conflict over, of all things, yams. Of course, the fight isn't really about yams, but something more, as we shall see. Obatala's Yams. The woman named Obatala owned an extensive plantation of yams. She had the knowledge of making these sacred yams grow and flourish, but the secret was known to no one else. Obatala wanted to employ a man to plant and cultivate her plantation, but she wanted to make sure that such a person would be discreet and not reveal her secret. Anyone to whom she divulged the knowledge had to have the capability of keeping silent about what he knew. Now, it was Obatala's opinion that when a man has women in his life, he's inclined not to be reliable in such matters, and so she sought to find a man who was sexually indifferent. She heard of a person named Orisha Oko, who, it was said, had never had or desired sexual relations with a woman. She sent for him, and after lengthy questioning, she appointed him chief of her plantation and instructed him in the magic of making the yams grow. He learned quickly. He planted and he cultivated, and Obatala's yams continued to grow well. Many people sought to find out the secret of Obatala's yams and what made them flourish, but they were unable to do so. If they tried to get Orisha Oko to say something about it, he kept his silence. Now, the young man named Shango had on numerous occasions implored Obatala to give him possession of her ritual drums, but Obatala's answer had always been to refuse him. Shango's mother, Yamaya, wanted very much to help her son fulfill his desire, and so she plotted as follows. If I can get from Orisha Oko the secret of the yams, I can give the secret to Shango. If I can ruin Obatala's plantation, she will have no more yams. Then Shango can exchange his yams for the drums he wants. And so Yamaya went to Orisha Oko and tried to make him divulge the secret of the cultivation of the yams. But Orisha Oko's answer was silence. Yamaya persisted. She came back day after day, but his answer was always the same, silence. Then one day, she said to Orisha Oko, "Let us go and lay together in the fields." Orisha Oko said nothing. She went to him again the next day and proposed again that they go lay together in the fields, but Orisha Oko ignored her. Day after day she went to where Orisha Oko was working and tried to arouse him. And finally, at last, she succeeded in making desire flow into his body, and together they lay on the ground. "Ah," Orisha Oko said, "this is a very pleasant thing we have done. We are going to do it every day." But Yamaya demanded that he give her in exchange the secret of the yams, which he did. She gave the secret to Shango, who began to grow yams, and while he grew yams, Yamaya continued to meet with Orisha Oko and have repeated trysts with him. Orisha Oko was so preoccupied with his new discovery, he neglected Obatala's yam plantation. He failed to do what he was supposed to do. And a time came when Obatala's yams were all withered and exhausted, and her plantation was barren. Then Shango brought a sack of his own yams to Obatala, saying, "Here, I have made a present for you." Obatala said, "How did you acquire these yams?" Shango said, "My mother has a secret of growing them." When Yamaya was certain that Obatala had no more yams left, she went to visit her, and she began to negotiate for the ritual drums that Shango wanted, and in the end it was agreed that Obatala would get the yams grown by Shango, and that Obatala would give him the drums. And so Shango acquired the drums, and he was acknowledged thereafter as their owner and their master. But as for Orisha Oko, he left Obatala's plantation and disappeared forever in the wilderness. Is the Bright Mother in this story? Is it Obatala, who kept the gift of yams to herself until Yamaya seduced Orisha Oko into revealing the secrets of their growth? Or is it Yemaya, who goes to great lengths to get her son Shango the drums, which will eventually be the way humans and the Loa communicate in rituals? I don't think there's an easy answer here, as both of these Loa bring gifts to the world, either in the form of food or sacred rites. Obatala's wrath towards Orisha Oko may seem less substantial than, for example, White Buffalo Woman's towards the man that she incinerates. But even in this story, Orisha Oko disappears into the wild after he fails his queen. And Shango is smart enough to know that when he gloats about getting the yams, he should do so in the form of an offering. If you wanted to bring offerings to Obatala or Yemaya, Louisa Teich's book Jambalaya tells some ways you might do just that. Obatala. Are you lacking in self-discipline? Have bitterness, avarice, and debilitating excesses, such as alcohol or narcotics, overtaken you? Then take your problem to Obatala. She will restore you to harmony with your natural self. If you worked with the handicapped or the elderly, Baba, Obatala will bless and inspire you. Charm. Peel and boil 8 white potatoes. Cut and mash them into a bowl. While the potatoes are still hot, stir in 1 tablespoon of white vegetable shortening and a small bag of grated, sweetened coconut. Roll the potato mixture into 8 bowls of equal size. Roll each bowl in bleached white flour lightly. Take a white bowl. Place in it a piece of white lace. Stack the bowls in the bowl to form a mountain. Talk to Obatala about your problem. As you name each problem, blow cool breath onto the mountain. On Sunday, go for a walk in the mountains with the bowl on your head. If mountains are not available to you, go for a walk in the park. Tie the lace around the bowls. Leave the bowls and your problems on top of the mountain or under a bush, and take the bowl home. Yemaya, if you'd like to have a child, or need a home, or better relationship with your sisters, talk to Big Mama, Yemaya, about your desires. Charm. Get a watermelon or a pineapple and cut a hole in the center, or remove the top. Place a deep blue candle in the center of the fruit and cover the fruit, not the candle, with molasses. Then sprinkle it with cornmeal. Take the fruit to the ocean or the largest body of water available at sunrise or at midnight. With 7 dimes, make a circle to represent the full moon. Place the fruit in the center and light the candle. Face the ocean and tell Yemaya your troubles. Cry if you need to. Let the water pass through you. Sit on the shore and gaze on her, or take a quick dip in the water naked. But don't linger too long. Don't complain too much. Be careful. Yemaya does not wish to see you in misery and may pull you into her arms with the undertow and restore you to her belly. All over the world there are stories of women who went to see Yemaya, walked into her waters, and were never seen again. Of course, Obatala and Yemaya are not the only Bright Mother figures in the Haitian pantheon. A number of other Heavenly Queen figures appear, including Erzuli and La Sirène, who is sometimes seen as a version of Erzuli, or as her sister. La Sirène is associated with the sea, being a mermaid figure, and the sea is sometimes associated with heavenly goddesses as well. Mary, in the Catholic tradition, often receives that association. One of La Sirène's followers, who portrays the Loa in Mardi Gras celebrations around Jacmel in Haiti, describes her processional like this. La Sirène is a magic spirit that lives under the sea and does mystical work there. She is a voodoo spirit. I dream of La Sirène all the time. I create La Sirène for Mardi Gras because my grandmother, father, and mother all serve the spirits. I love her and I honor her. The baby I carry in my arms is the child of La Sirène, who is called Marie Rose. When I walk the streets, I sing her song, which goes, I am La Sirène, and I cry for La Sirène. When I cast spells in the night, bad luck can come my way. I prepare for La Silen by putting on a hat and a mask, and I carry an umbrella. I also put on a necklace and gloves. The necklace is called a Mambo Welcome. It is a fetish. Because La Sirene is a fish, she has to disguise herself as a woman to be at Mardi Gras. My mask and hat cover her fish's head. And the dress she wears covers her fish's tail. The chain I wear is a sacred chain. Each year I change the disguise and fashion a new baby. In order to get inspiration, I go to the place where the big beasts live, and they instruct me how to do Mardi Gras. I have been doing this for 18 years. Before that, I did another Mardi Gras character called Patoko. This was with a group of men who were dressed as women, with nice dresses and high-heeled shoes. We did a marriage between men and women on the street. After that, we had a group called the Duck. We carried brushes in our hands and wore blue trousers, white t-shirts, new sandals, and a scarf around our waists. We swept the streets of Yakmel. I have always found a way of doing a Mardi Gras. Whether stealing the secrets of growing yams or parading in the streets with a doll baby, the Haitian queens of heaven are all shown as devoted mothers of some kind, tending to their children, who are often seen as representative of humans somehow. I mentioned Mary earlier, another heavenly queen with a divine child, and it is to one of her forms that we turn for our last tale, right after this music.
I pray to La Sirene, she who calls the waves her own. I pray to La Sirene, I pray to La Sirene. I dance for La Sirene,
La Sirene.
She who calls the waves her own. I dance for La Sirene,
La Sirene.
I dance for La Sirene,
La Sirene.
I sing for La Sirene,
La Sirene.
She who calls the waves her own. I sing for La Sirene,
La Sirene.
I sing for La Sirene,
La Sirene.
I pray to La Sirene,
La Sirene.
I pray to La Sirene.
Singing low, show me how your God.
Tell me
how the current flows. Teach me how to breathe below. Let a water flow through me, prove as true as the roll of ocean.
The waves are on.
Upon the shore, I'll sing to you. I'll gladly come and see you soon. Water fills me, come and dance to float across
the waves are on.
My water fills my spell in hand. Stay hail and welcome now.
Virgin of Guadalupe. Early on the day of December 9th, 1531, an Indian peasant named Juan Diego of the village of Tolpetlac was on his way to the town of Tlatelolco, near Mexico City. A convert to Christianity, Juan Diego intended to attend a mass there. The journey led him past a hill, Tepeyac, once considered one of the most sacred hills of Tonantzin, the Aztec fertility goddess associated with the moon. It was still a place of great power, even though the Lord Jesus and his Blessed Mother had replaced Tonantzin in the hearts of the people. And on this day, Juan Diego heard a beautiful voice singing quietly and he looked up to see a bright golden cloud upon the hill. The singing paused, and a voice came to him from the cloud, beckoning him by his very name, Juan Diego. He made his way up the hill, and saw at the top a dark-skinned woman. She had the complexion of an Indian, just like his. From all around her, the golden cloud emanated so brilliantly that it lit up the rocks and the cacti like gemstones in the dim light of the early morning. She spoke, and said she was the Virgin Mary, and she would help the Indian people if their bishop would build a shrine to her here on the hill. Juan forgot all about the mass he planned to attend, and instead he hastened to the bishop, and finally gained an audience explaining what he had seen and heard on that hill. But the cleric simply did not believe the outlandish story. Perhaps something had made this peasant's mind feverish or feeble. On his way back home that evening, Juan Diego climbed the hill, and he explained what had happened. The cloud-lit figure appeared again and asked him to try once more the next day. Juan Diego suggested that perhaps she should send someone of a more noble stature than he. He was only a peasant. But she insisted urgently that it be Juan Diego who made her appeal to the bishop. So the following day, Juan Diego gained another interview with the bishop, who was still skeptical, saying he needed a more certain sign than the mere word of a peasant. And again that evening, the lady on the hill reappeared and told Juan Diego he must try once more. It turned out that Juan Diego could not comply. He learned that his uncle had taken ill and spent the next day and night caring for him. When at dawn the old man took a turn for the worse, Juan Diego went out to find a priest to administer the last rites. He took a path that avoided the hill, but the lady appeared to him yet again, saying that his uncle was cured and he should climb the hill and pick some roses that he would find there on a miraculous bush. He did as she bade, and when he returned to her with the roses, she arranged them in his cloak, telling him to take his tilma, or cloak, to the bishop. Once again Juan Diego presented himself to the bishop, and when he loosened the cloak, the roses fell out. And there, inside the tilma, appeared the likeness of Our Lady of Guadalupe. Here was the sign the bishop required. He ordered a shrine to be built on the hill, and to this day it is a basilica to which thousands of pilgrims come each year to behold the very cloak that Juan Diego took to the bishop so long ago. Nuestra Señora de Guadalupe, Our Lady of Guadalupe, is the patroness today of all Mexico, and her likeness is found in the homes of millions of Spanish-speaking people all over the world, and particularly in the United States and North America. She's often pictured standing in a full-body aura on the horns of a black crescent moon, supported there by an angel. In the state of New Mexico alone, there are 8 localities identified as Guadalupe in honor of the Dark Virgin. There, as shown on the flat painted retablos, she is the most popular version of the Holy Mother, except perhaps for Nuestra Señora de los Dolores, associated with the Penitentes. The Virgin of Guadalupe is known to intercede with general favors in sickness and against all evil, especially war. The Tilma of Juan Diego is still around in the shrine dedicated to the Virgin of Guadalupe in Mexico, if you ever want to see it. Of course, a number of scholars and students of mythologies have pointed out that this version of Mary shares a number of features with the Aztec god Huitzilopochtli, I'm sure I butchered that, or even more with the Nahuatl goddess Tonantzin, which means appropriately, mother. La Guadalupe is also not as unambiguously a bright mother, and in fact belongs to a class of virginal apparitions known as Black Madonnas, because of their dark skin hue. Another such famous Black Madonna is the Madonna of Częstochowa, in Poland, who is frequently venerated in Haiti as a manifestation of Erzuli. Working with La Guadalupe is surprisingly simple as a practice to keep up. Her image can be found anywhere with a large Mexican-American or more broadly Hispanic population. Burning a candle before her image while reciting the following prayer is said to gain her favor. Remember, merciful Virgin Mary of Guadalupe, with your heavenly presence in the mountain of Tepeyac, promising your loving clemency and compassion to those who love you and ask for your help in their lives, offering to hear our pleas, cleanse our tears, and give us hope. Never has it been said by those that reach out to you that you have not given your protection to those who need it. Never have you abandoned us. With this confidence, we come to you, Virgin Mary, Mother of God. Though we are sinners, we prostrate ourselves before your image, praying that you will grant your merciful promises. We pray that nothing nor anyone will harm us. May we not have any sickness, fear, pain, accident, or suffering. As an admired image, you have stayed with us. You who are our mother, our health, and our life, we deem nothing more. Do not deny us. O Holy Mother of God, listen to us with compassion and grant our pleas. Amen. Of course, you will also need to show kindness, generosity, and love to the poor whom she favors especially. Offerings to her can be made anytime, but on her feast day of December 12th, making sure to say a novena, a 9-prayer cycle often begun or ended on the night of the feast and carried on over a period of 9 nights, is certainly one way to approach her. Holding a feast of foods she likes, like rice and beans, corn tortillas, and other peasant fare, is another way. It's said she helps the sick and needy, but will listen to anyone who approaches her. La Guadalupe is officially recognized by the Catholic Church, and she is very much a Christian icon, no matter what her Nahuatl origins might be. A relationship with her likely means that you'll have to be tolerant towards all of her children, Christian and otherwise, and exhibit love and kindness that she values so much. Icons of La Guadalupe usually show her standing on the crescent moon with stars at her feet. She is then very much a heavenly queen. She is not White Buffalo Woman, she is not La Sirene, or Yemaya, or Obatala. All of these bright mothers, though, share a few things in common. They bring us hope in dark times, and they can be demanding as well as generous. They want what's best for all their children, and they offer people ways to talk to the divine. They are not always warm and affectionate, they keep their distance as often as not, but they all look out for their families. I hope you've enjoyed these stories. I know we've only barely begun to properly discuss this aspect of the feminine divine, and we'd love to hear your stories of similar figures from your own cultural or family lore. You can always reach us by emailing us at compassandkey@gmail.com or finding us at our website, newworldwitchery.com. You can find us on Twitter and Facebook as well, and follow our pin board on Pinterest. If you enjoy the show and want to help keep it going, please visit our Patreon page at patreon.com/newworldwitchery. A buck or two a month from you makes us better and earns you fun rewards like extra episodes or bonus material. Our sources for this episode can be found in our show notes, as can the links to the artists who graciously provided their music, either by permission or under a Creative Commons license. As always, thanks for listening. Be well. New World Witchery is a Patreon-supported podcast. We'd like to thank our sponsors for this episode:
Diana Carino, Renee Otters,
E. Old Magic Shop, Raven Darkmoon,
Ivory, The Witch's View Podcast,
Sarah, Molly,
Jen Rue of Rue and Hyssop, Athena Beth,
Catherine, Corvus, and Jessica. Thanks so much.
Thank you.